Maybe months before the Federal Communications Commission rules on GCI's application to take over two small television stations in Southeast and one in Anchorage. Commercial broadcasters have lined up to oppose the purchase and request a hearing before the commission, but a hearing is something the FCC is often reluctant to hold. As Rosemary Alexander reports, the question hinges on the public interest.
Juneau resident Walter Gregg is old enough to remember when television in Alaska was all tape-delayed.
We didn't watch the moon landing live. We got it later, and not very high quality.
Gregg lives in downtown Juneau and is a regular viewer of five major network stations over the air, including NBC affiliate KATH and KTVA, a CBS affiliate from Anchorage. It's seen in the capital city via relay station KXLJ. In November, GCI announced that its subsidiary, Denali Media Holdings, would buy low-power KATH and sister station KSCT in Sitka, as well as KTVA. The stations are picked up in parts of their respective communities by television antenna for free. Now Gregg wonders if he'll eventually have to pay to watch NBC and CBS on GCI cable, as do viewers in much of outlying Juneau, where cable and satellite providers are the only way to get TV.
I had a gut reaction against what they were doing just from the standpoint of, oh my gosh, the cable company is going to own the broadcast stations too.
Gregg has written a letter to the FCC protesting GCI's purchase. Juneau Senator Dennis Egan says he also will weigh in. He's been hearing from constituents on the issue and shares their concerns.
You know, it worries me that you're going to be required to subscribe to cable to get over-the-air television.
GCI has not stated its intention for the stations, except to become, quote, a news and entertainment leader unparalleled in Alaska. That also worries Alaska's commercial television licensees, who will compete over the air and on cable. GCI claims to pass 80% of Alaska households and has the corner on the cable television market. It has 70% share of the consumer broadband market.
GCI is really a monopoly in cable TV and broadband in this state, and very strong in wireless.
Andrew McLeod is president and general manager of KTUU in Anchorage, an NBC affiliate. KTUU and four other owners of television stations in Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks have submitted a petition to deny to the FCC. Anchorage station KYES has filed a separate petition. McLeod says the broadcasters welcome competition, but doubts a distribution company as large as GCI would compete fairly.
When you mix distribution and content, we want to make sure there's a level playing field because distributors can squeeze out content providers like us who provide news and entertainment via their strength in distribution.
GCI is leasing space in the Anchorage Daily News building for a news department. The company has hired former KTUU News Director John Tracy to help create a news division. Tracy is now co-owner of advertising agency Bradley Reed & Associates. GCI spokesman David Morris says the company's entry into the broadcast market will increase competition.
It's our goal to create a premier news and information company. We plan to roll out high definition, and we think that's what consumers want. And to the extent that that stimulates other broadcasters to become more competitive, we think that's a good thing.
The broadcaster's petition to deny compares GCI's application to Comcast's 2011 acquisition of NBC Universal. Comcast was already one of the nation's largest communications companies, and the FCC required a number of conditions limiting competition between cable and broadcast television. KTUU's McLeod calls the conditions safety guides.
So that a strong distribution company like Comcast couldn't operate a content company and disadvantage all the other content companies.
Angela Campbell is a communications attorney and professor at Georgetown University Law School in Washington, D.C. Over the years, she has filed numerous challenges to applications before the Federal Communications Commission. Campbell believes the Comcast-NBC case does set precedent, but in all cases before the FCC...
The question really is this in the public interest?
While broadcasters argue GCI's television station takeover would put too much power in the hands of one company, GCI's qualification to assume the licenses is not challenged. And the FCC has thrown out a previous rule that prohibited ownership of a cable and television station in the same market.
This is a much harder case for the challengers to win because they don't have a specific rule to help them.
Campbell says concerns the stations would no longer operate over the air but only on cable is real, considering the FCC's push to free up space in the broadcast airwaves.
They're basically trying to get television broadcasters to be willing to give up their spectrum in exchange for money and give spectrum back to the FCC, and then the FCC is going to auction that to wireless.
But the value of spectrum in the tiny television market of Juneau would probably be low. At this point, commercial stations and viewers' concerns are speculation because GCI has not publicly announced details of its expansion. Campbell says the current FCC looks more favorably on the cable industry than have past commissions and is very interested in expanding broadband, which GCI has been steadily doing throughout the state. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
As the legislature considers cutting taxes on oil companies, state lawmakers were in Washington, D.C. last week meeting with oil and gas lobbyists. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, they were in D.C. for a meeting of the Energy Council, a group consisting of Alaska, 10 other states, 4 Canadian provinces, and the Venezuelan government.
Neither the Energy Council nor its affiliated nonprofit CLEAR has a website. They're headquartered at the same address in Dallas, Texas. And the Energy Council's filings with the government list its mission as serving as a forum for governmental entities to discuss energy and environmental policy issues. That was on full display Friday morning at the elegant Washington Court Hotel. Kansas State Senator Carolyn McGinn kicked off the conference by thanking the sponsors.
Today's luncheon is sponsored by another longtime friend of the Energy Council, Mr. Mike McGarry of the Nuclear Energy Institute.
McGinn went on.
Tomorrow's breakfast will be hosted by Sarah Tise of Exxon Oil.
And she continued.
For a number of years, Paul Connell of BP Alaska has served as the sponsor for each and every CLEAR University Advisory Board seminar. This meeting is no exception, and I'd like to ask Paul to stand so that we may thank him for his continuing generosity. Thank you, Paul. And thank you to BP.
Also on the list of attendees, Bill Bracken, ExxonMobil's lobbyist in Alaska, Portia Babcock, ConocoPhillips' chief lobbyist in Alaska, Michelle Egan with the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Nikki Martin from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, Rick Rogers, the executive director of the Resource Development Council for Alaska. The list goes on and includes about 20 members of the legislature. Some brought spouses, others brought staffers. The Energy Council chairman is Sitka Republican Bert Stedman. Senator Stedman had the honor of introducing Billy Tazan. Tazan, a Democrat turned Republican, is also a congressman turned D.C. lobbyist. Stedman told the crowd there's something to learn from Tazan's career.
As a Democrat, he didn't have Republican opposition. Then he swapped to the Republicans and didn't have Democratic opposition. So we should all aspire to those goals. Getting elected and not having opposition.
Tazan regaled the attendees, who were busy eating plates of bacon and eggs, with stories of a different Washington, of a Washington where opposing lawmakers would come together to work on energy or to fix the tax code. He's lobbying to protect certain federal tax provisions for oil producers.
But as long as we have it, there are provisions in that tax code that are critical to the production of energy in this country. And to strip them out just for the sake of saving a few billion dollars in a $16 trillion deficit situation makes little sense to me.
Some lawmakers have proposed cutting $2 to $4 billion in tax credits to the oil industry as a way to offset spending.
There's one particular provision in the code which I'm working on trying to preserve, which affects ConocoPhillips, Alaska, which is a sponsor of this organization meeting today. It's called dual capacity.
Tazan says that provision prevents U.S.-based oil companies from double taxation on foreign-earned money. meaning if they bring the money back to the U.S., they won't be taxed on it.
More and more of our companies are seeing more of that revenue from foreign sales.
Tizan is lobbying to protect federal interests, but the lobbyists in town from Alaska will have plenty of time to make the lower taxes pitch to state lawmakers this weekend. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
An earthquake occurred Sunday afternoon and was felt in Anchorage and areas to the northwest. The Alaska Earthquake Information Center reports earthquake had a preliminary magnitude of 4.0 and struck shortly after 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. It was centered about 28 miles northwest of Anchorage. The earthquake was felt throughout the Cook Inlet area, and there were no reports of any damage. A Fort Wainwright soldier who killed a fellow soldier last summer has been convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to a dishonorable discharge and 4 years in a military prison. Court-martial was held last month for 22-year-old Joshua Jordan Corona. He fatally shot 19-year-old Jawan Collins at Corona's apartment where the two men had been drinking. Army spokesman John Pennell said Corona will serve his time at the military prison in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Civilian criminal charges were dropped against Corona last year. Fairbanks police said the incident was an accidental shooting followed by an attempted cover-up. Police arrested a Kodiak woman accused of stealing nearly $50,000 by writing forged checks. 45-year-old Maria Drinkwine was arraigned on more than 40 counts of felony theft. According to court documents, the investigation started when a man came forward last month to report that many checks he did not write had been written to Drinkwine. He had been away for parts of December and January, and Drinkwine had been given access to his house to walk his dog. The man told police he had known Drinkwine for a long time and briefly had an intimate relationship with her. He said he provided financial help to Drinkwine by paying more than $10,000 in medical bills for her. And a Mexican woman has admitted to being in the country illegally. 44-year-old Yolanda Perez Orozco pled guilty on Friday. She had been deported from the United States twice before but was caught living and working here in the panhandle. Perez Orozco worked as a restaurant manager in Petersburg. Her attorney says a local police officer suspected that she was not a citizen and then investigated. A federal grand jury indicted her in January on one count of reentry after deportation, a federal crime that can carry 20 years in prison. She told the judge she returned to the U.S. to be with her children who were born in the U.S. and are citizens. Prosecutors are recommending that she serve a year in prison before she is deported again.